Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a shortcut. We're aiming to get you incredibly well informed about something absolutely fundamental to your body's function.
Yeah, the intricate network of muscles in your back and abdomen. It's a core system, literally.
Exactly. And you've given us a fantastic resource here, a really comprehensive deep dive into these muscles. It's packed with brilliant memory aids and some, fascinating insights into how their names often give away their form and function.
That's the beauty of anatomical naming sometimes.
Our mission today is basically to unpack all of this. We want to transform what can often feel like a really dense, maybe overwhelming topic into something clear, something intuitive.
Makes sense.
We're going to navigate the layers, the distinct shapes, and the surprising connections of these crucial muscles. By the end, you'll have a seriously smart kind of insider's perspective on your own core and spinal support system.
Think of it as a journey into your body's blueprint.
Yeah, like understanding the design.
Exactly. And what's truly fascinating here, I think, is moving beyond just memorizing names. It's really about grasping the elegant, intelligent design of your own body.
Right.
These muscles are fundamental to everything you do, from maintaining good posture, executing complex movements, even to the simple life-sustaining act of breathing. And as we go, we'll actively explore how their names are often like hidden clues, which should make this whole journey much more intuitive for you.
So it's not just rote learning.
Not at all. This deep dive isn't just about the what, it's really about the why behind these structures. And that's absolutely key to truly understanding and, importantly, retaining this information.
Okay, let's put that principle to the test then, right from the start. Let's begin with, well, perhaps the most recognized yet often misunderstood
Yeah.
area, the abdomen.
Good starting point.
When you think of abs, it's easy to picture just one muscle, right? But our source quickly introduces us to four foundational players, each with these beautifully descriptive names.
Yep, it's a system.
First up is the one everyone knows, the rectus abdominis. These are those prominent column-shaped muscles that, for some people, form the six-pack.
The showy ones.
Exactly. Its name is wonderfully direct. Rectus describes its straight, parallel look, and abdominis clearly marks its location in the abdomen. Simple.
And it's a prime mover for trunk flexion, like when you do a crunch. A great example of how anatomy can be so literal.
Right. But what's often overlooked, kind of nestled behind the rectus abdominis within its connective tissue sheath, there's another one.
Yeah, the tiny pyramidalis muscle. True to its name, it's triangle-shaped. It attaches right to the front of your pelvis, specifically the pubic symphysis, that cartilage joint at the front, and parts of the pubic crest.
Okay, so it's small but has a specific spot.
Exactly. And while it is small, it plays a role in tensing the linea alba, which is that central tendon of the abdominal wall. So it's a subtle but, significant part of that foundational structure.
Okay, so we have the rectus abdominis front and center. Now let's sort of peel back a layer, or maybe move laterally, and discover the muscles that wrap around your entire abdomen.
The obliques.
Yes, the external oblique and just underneath of the internal oblique. The internal being deep to external is pretty straightforward.
That part's easy enough.
But here's what's really clever, what our source points out. You can use the direction of the muscle fibers themselves to tell them apart, even without seeing how deep they are.
Oh, this is a good one.
Our source gives us this brilliant mental image. Picture an extrovert at a party, all open, looking up, happy to engage. Their external oblique fibers point upwards and medially, just like that extrovert.
Okay, I can picture that. Up and out, sort of.
Right. Now imagine an introvert maybe looking down at their drink,
Yeah.
more inwardly focused. Their internal oblique fibers point downwards and medially, mirroring that inward focus.
Down and in. That's actually a fantastic visual shortcut. Super effective.
Isn't it? Helps lock it in.
That analogy perfectly illustrates their orientation. And knowing how these outer layers contribute to twisting and bending, well, it naturally leads us to a deeper question.
Which is?
What about the true foundational element for deep core stability? We're talking about the transverse abdominis.
The TA.
Exactly. Its name is a perfect descriptor because it literally transverses your entire abdomen.
Like a belt.
Almost like a natural corset, yeah. This is a truly remarkable muscle. It's this wide band that originates on one side of your lumbar vertebrae, attaches along your ribs and pelvis, and then sweeps all the way around to the other side of your vertebrae.
Wow, it really wraps around.
It does. It acts as your body's natural girdle.
Yeah.
And when you engage it, it compresses your abdominal contents, creating this incredible intra-abdominal pressure that stabilizes your spine.
Like bracing for a heavy lift.
Precisely. Think about how a power lifter braces before a heavy lift. They're consciously activating their transverse abdominis to protect their back. It's your body's kind of hidden superpower for core strength.
That makes so much sense. I remember my yoga instructor always cueing, "Draw your navel to your spine." And now I finally get exactly which muscle she was targeting.
That's the one.
Okay, so we've established the front and side-facing strengths of your core. Now let's turn our attention to the unsung hero supporting that wall from the back,
The QL.
the quadratus lumborum, often called the QL, yes. It stands guard back there. And this one, it almost has a memory device built right into its name, making it easier for you to pinpoint.
It does.
Quadratus means square-shaped, and lumborum refers to the lumbar region, your lower back. So boom, you immediately know its shape and location just from its name.
Pretty clear, right?
But what's truly insightful about the QL, I think, is its critical role in tasks like walking and lifting. It helps stabilize your lower spine and pelvis, particularly when you're moving one leg forward.
Absolutely. And it's often a key player in common lower back pain. Understanding its deep square position immediately tells you why targeted stretches or strengthening for the low back can be so effective for, pain relief.
That's a really practical connection.
It is. And as we transition fully to the back muscles now, your compass for understanding these will really be a quick refresher on vertebral anatomy.
The bones of the spine.
Exactly. Think of it as having a map for where every single muscle fiber attaches. The big central projection on the back of a vertebral bone, that's the spinous process.
Okay, the pointy bit in the middle.
Right. And the wing-like projections on each side are the transverse processes. This distinction is vital because if you see spinous or transverses in a muscle name, you immediately have a clue about its attachments.
Ah, like road signs.
Sort of. Also, keep in mind, some back muscles are massive structures spanning the entire column, while others are multiple tiny muscles connecting just one or two vertebrae. This variation allows for a whole spectrum of movement, from broad posture adjustments to incredibly fine, localized control.
Okay, map in hand. Let's talk about perhaps the most familiar back muscle group, the erector spinae.
The big ones.
Yeah, as its name elegantly implies, this group literally erects or straightens the spine. Now, at the gym, you might see them shown as two thick, column-shaped muscles running up your low back.
That's the common image.
But our source makes it clear they're actually a coordinated group of three distinct muscles, much like the quadriceps are four.
Right, it's a group effort.
Here's a fantastic mental image our source suggests to keep them straight. Picture all these muscles running parallel, superior to inferior, up and down. They all share that common goal of maintaining an upright posture and extending the spine.
Okay.
So once you identify those long bundles, you just need to label them from the medial line, the center line, outward. The most medial, closest to the spine, is the spinalis.
Makes sense, spinalis.
And remembering our vertebral review, the spinalis attaches to the spinous process, that bony projection dead center of the vertebra, making it as medial as you can get.
Got it.
Moving just lateral to that, we find the longissimus. This is the thickest and, true to its name, the longest of the erector spinae group.
Longissimus longus.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
Its branches literally run from the pelvis all the way up to the base of your skull. So longissimus really does fit its impressive reach.
Wow, that's quite a span.
Finally, the most lateral is the iliocostalis. This one has an incredibly intuitive name too,
Yeah.
connecting the ilio, that's the ilium, part of your
So the costal, your ribs.
Exactly. Its origins on the pelvis and attachments to the ribs immediately tell you how far to the side it sits. So from inside out, it's spinalis, longissimus, and iliocostalis working together.
Right, like three parallel columns. But what's truly insightful about this group, and really a testament to the body's sophisticated design, is their segmentation.
Segmentation, meaning they're not just one solid muscle.
Precisely. Each of these seemingly long muscles, like the iliocostalis you mentioned, is actually composed of tinier, overlapping segments that align with different regions of the spine lumbar, thoracic, and cervical.
Oh, okay.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this segmentation is crucial. It's what allows you to move specific sections of your back independently.
Right, so you can bend your neck without bending your lower back.
Exactly. Imagine the chaos if your entire erector spinae fired as one solid unit. Every time you straightened your lower back, you'd also crane your neck backwards into this awkward extension. This elegant, segmented structure allows for incredibly precise, localized control over spinal movement and posture.
That's fascinating design. Mm-hmm. So the erector spinae forms that big, powerful, superficial muscle group we often feel.
Yeah.
But underneath it.
Underneath, we find the more delicate yet equally vital transversospinalis group. These muscles are much deeper.
And their names, as our source points out, have this delightfully lyrical quality, almost like an Italian menu for spinal stability.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, they do have a nice ring to them.
First on our menu, then, is the semispinalis group. We just discussed the spinalis, which connects spinous process to spinous process.
Mm-hmm.
So these are semispinalis because they connect the spinous process to something else specifically, the transverse processes,
mm-hmm.
and they span across multiple vertebrae.
Exactly right. For instance, you have the semispinalis cervicis. It originates on transverse processes of your upper thoracic vertebrae and inserts on the spinous processes of your cervical vertebrae.
So it helps move the neck.
Allows for extension and rotation of the neck, yeah. The thoracis does the same thing lower down the spine. And then there's the capitis, which originates on vertebrae but inserts way up on the back of the skull itself, contributing to head movement.
So each segment allows for more localized, precise movement.
And stabilization, exactly,
yeah.
Over several spinal segments.
Okay, next up on the menu, the multifidus. This is another fascinating example. A muscle group made of multiple tiny segments.
Spanning almost the entire length of the spine from the sacrum all the way up to the skull.
And its name, multifidus, is pretty literal then.
It really is. It means split into many parts. It's made of many tiny, deep muscle bundles.
And where does it sit?
It sits in that natural little valley formed by the transverse and spinous processes. Its primary, incredibly important job is providing deep segmental stability to the spine during all movements, even really subtle ones.
So when you hear about deep core engagement,
the multifidus is a key player, absolutely. It provides fine-tuned control and helps protect your spine. It's all about creating that nuanced internal bracing.
Okay, deeper still, even deeper than the multifidi.
We encounter the rotator muscles. These are truly tiny. They connect the transverse process of one vertebra to the lamina, that's the flat bony plate on the back of the vertebra, and then to the spinous process of the vertebra immediately above it.
Wow, very specific connections.
Very specific and very short, spanning only one or two segments. Because they're so small and deep, their main function is more about highly localized stabilization of the spine than causing big rotational movements.
But they're called rotators.
Well, because their muscle fibers run more horizontally compared to the longer, vertically oriented erector spinae, the name rotators still makes sense anatomically, even if stabilization is their key role day to day.
I see.
What's also fascinating here is the subtlety of their function. They provide a lot of proprioceptive feedback, basically telling your brain exactly where each part of your spine is in space.
Like little sensors?
Kind of, yeah. You might mostly see the rotator thoracis highlighted in anatomy texts because they're the most developed and easiest to see. But rotators also exist in the cervical and lumbar regions, completing this really deep stabilizing network.
Okay, and to complete our journey into these intricate deep muscles, let's explore the absolute smallest, the most localized connections. Dessert for our Italian menu.
Ah, yes, the interspinalis and intertransversari.
The interspinalis muscles. They sound exactly like what they are. Tiny connections between the spinous processes of adjacent vertebrae.
The prefix inter gives it away, meaning between.
Right. And our source notes that many people don't actually have them in their thoracic spine. So you'll almost always see them prominently in the cervical, the neck, and lumbar, lower back regions.
Where you need more fine-tuned movement and stability.
Makes sense. Likewise, the intertransversarii are found between the transverse processes of the same vertebrae. Again, thanks to that inter and transverse in the name.
Just connecting those side projections.
Like the interspinalis, they are tiny but seem crucial for incredibly localized stability, especially when you're making those small, precise adjustments to your posture or body position.
They're the real micromanagers of the spine, the unsung heroes of micro movements.
Okay, great. Now let's shift our deep dive slightly over to the thoracic wall.
The rib cage area.
Exactly. The bony cage protecting your vital organs and helping you breathe. You mentioned we'll hear a specific Latin term a lot here.
Yes, costal. Whenever you hear costal in anatomy, it's your immediate clue that we're talking about the ribs.
Got it. Costal equals ribs, so the intercostal muscles.
Must run between the ribs, hence intercostal.
Right. And you have two primary sets. the external and internal intercostals, both connecting rib to rib.
And just like we saw in the abdomen with the obliques.
The internals are deep to the externals.
Okay.
And our source gives a fair warning. Some professors might throw in innermost intercostals as a third, even deeper layer.
Yeah, that can happen. But for a solid understanding, knowing the external and internal is usually sufficient. They're absolutely crucial for the mechanics of breathing, expanding, and contracting the chest cavity.
Okay, so inter means between. What about subcostals?
Good question. If the intercostals go between the ribs, the subcostals are found under the ribs.
Underneath them.
Specifically, they're on the inside surfaces of the backside of the lower ribs, closer to the spine than the skin. They're often thin and kind of irregular, sometimes crossing one or more ribs.
Then what do?
They contribute to depressing the ribs, especially during forced exhalation, like coughing or blowing out hard. Again, that subtle distinction in their name sub under helps you pinpoint their exact location.
Okay. The last muscles using that costal root are the levators costrum. These are in the back.
Yes, in the back. They originate on the transverse processes of your thoracic vertebrae and attach to the ribs just below them.
And levators sounds like elevators.
Exactly. It means lifters. When they contract, their strategic position allows them to elevate the ribs, which helps with inhalation, pulling the rib cage up and out. The name literally describes their action.
Love it when the name tells the story. Okay, next up, a muscle group whose shape is described right in its name. The serratus posterior superior and serratus posterior inferior.
Serratuses.
Yes, referring to that serrated or jagged sawtooth pattern you'd see if you looked right at them.
And they're designated posterior because there's another prominent serratus muscle around the ribs, the serratus anterior, which is more front-facing, involved in shoulder blade movement.
Ah, okay, so posterior puts these ones on the back.
Right. And the superior and inferior clearly indicate their positions along the spine. The superior one elevates the upper ribs, assisting inspiration, while the inferior one depresses the lower ribs, aiding forced expiration.
So opposite actions, top and bottom.
Correct.
Okay.
And our source gives a great pro tip for you. If you ever get confused between the serratus posterior superior and the rhomboid muscles, which are nearby,
yeah.
Remember the naming conventions? Serratus muscles have that distinctive jagged sawtooth appearance. The rhomboids, on the other hand, have a more geometric, sort of kite-like shape. It's a great visual memory aid.
Serrated versus geometric. Got it. Now, returning to the front of the ribs,
okay.
We find the transverse thoracis. This is a group of muscles on the inside of the chest wall.
That's right, lining the inner surface. They form a rather cool sort of diamond-like shape around the sternum, the breastbone.
And how to remember this one?
Well, you can remember it because it looks like it transverses or stretches across the entire front of the thorax, connecting the sternum to the inner surface of the ribs.
Ah, like the transverse abdominis, but for the thorax.
Similar concept in the name, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And like the subcostals, they also aid in forced expiration by helping to depress the ribs.
Okay. That covers a lot of the chest wall. What's left?
Finally, we come to a muscle so unique and so essential that, as our source rightfully says, you might not even need a memory device for it.
Ooh. Which one is that?
The diaphragm.
Ah, of course, the diaphragm.
This wide dome-shaped muscle attaches all over the inside of your body to your lower ribs, your sternum, and your lumbar vertebrae. It's your primary muscle of breathing.
The main one.
Absolutely. It contracts and flattens to draw air into your lungs and then relaxes to let air out. And it masterfully separates the thoracic cavity, your chest, from the abdominal cavity below.
It's literally the floor of the chest and the roof of the abdomen.
Perfectly put. And this raises an important question, I think. How often do we truly appreciate the sheer elegance and importance of this one muscle? It works tirelessly, unconsciously, every second of your life.
You don't even think about it.
Rarely. So give this vital muscle the respect it deserves. Memorize it on its own. No complex memory device required. Just pure, undeniable importance to your very existence.
Wow, what an incredible deep dive. Seriously. Into the magnificent architecture of your back and abdomen.
It really is intricate, isn't it?
From the, you know, the showy rectus abdominis we started with, all the way down to the deepest, tiniest rotators, and finishing with the all-important, tireless diaphragm. We've unpacked so many layers.
And hopefully demystified some of those names.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And discover the clever logic embedded in their names and functions. Hopefully you listening have experienced some real aha moments today.
Yeah, gaining a much clearer appreciation for how these muscles are named, organized, and how they function together.
To support almost every single movement you make, big or small, this truly is your body's elegant living blueprint.
Absolutely. And this leaves us with an important question, maybe something for you to consider. As you now understand the individual components of these muscle groups, their specific names, precise locations, how they contribute to your core and spinal support, how does that change your perception of complex movements?
Like lifting or twisting.
Exactly. Whether it's lifting a box, twisting to reach something, or even just maintaining good posture while sitting upright, how does this detailed knowledge deepen your understanding of your own body's mechanics?
That's a good thought.
What's fascinating here is how this kind of knowledge can empower you. It could potentially influence how you approach exercise, physical activity, or even just how you carry yourself through the day.
Making the connection between anatomy and everyday life.
Precisely. We hope this deep dive has given you a powerful shortcut to being truly well-informed and perhaps sparked even more curiosity about the amazing human body.